I am Austin Lugo.
I am Brendan Hess.
And this is the Nom Nom Project. All right, today we are in person. I'm looking at Brandon face to face.
Very awkward.
Can touch him.
I don't like podcasting in person.
Why? Podcasting in person is the best way to podcast.
It's different.
It's preferred, honestly.
I would prefer if there was a computer screen in front of me. That's how I'm used to talking in general now. I just truly am a Zoomer, I've discovered.
Well, we're glad you are all back. We're excited for another fascinating episode of the Nom Nom Project. Brandon, this first question is for you. What is the role of the dragon in Vietnamese mythology?
So there's two different components of dragons in Vietnamese history. The first is the dragon in mythology, and that's like Lạc Long Quan, the, you know, founder of Vietnam, as well as essentially every Vietnamese dynasty has a dragon myth associated with their establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also a couple other dragons in like Vietnamese antiquity in the stories of like the battles between the gods. But then there's also the dragon as like a political symbol. And that's where like dragon is kind of equal to the American eagle, where if a government office is decorated with a dragon, you know it's like important, it's like prestigious. Or like if you are like living in a city named after a dragon, because that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. There's like lots of locations named after dragons. You know you're living somewhere that has like historical significance, like it was the seat of an empire, or there was like a great general who was born there, or whatever.
So when you say name of a dragon, are there like specific dragons for like different people, or?
It seems like it's just kind of put into the name somewhere. So there's like, for example, there's a festivity where they do these like dragon boat races.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like this river in Vietnam where they have these races on boats that are carved in the shapes of dragons. And I think this river goes out into a bay, which they've named like Dragon Bay or something. And then there's like Dragon Island. And there's also like a city somewhere in central Vietnam called like the City of Flying Dragons or something. So it's just kind of like in there.
It's everywhere. Yeah. So then I imagine the dragon mythology most likely comes from when the Ming Dynasty took over in like the early...
There's definitely Chinese influence to dragons. I think it's also a component of like Taoism as well, because dragons appear a lot in like Chinese religious history. Mm-hmm. But it seems like dragons are like a historical phenomenon in Asia that kind of transcend nation states. Like there's dragon myths in every country, and especially in Vietnam you'll find lots of dragons. But there's artworks of like dragon mugs, like they'll carve dragons out of like jade and other stones, and I've definitely seen those in China before, or in like history exhibits where there's Chinese artifacts. They'll have like, you know, China ware that's carved as dragons, and so you see that stuff in Vietnam too. So there's definitely like an overlap. I'm sure there's a lot of Chinese influence on the image of the dragon. Mm-hmm. But at the same time there are myths of dragons and stories about dragons that go back to before the Chinese empires dominated Vietnam.
So do you know of any particular dragon myths?
As a matter of fact, I happen to know of the Vietnamese dragon legend Con Rong Chau Tien.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know about this one. Wait.
Brandon's on Wikipedia right now.
It's not Wikipedia. It's a travel blog.
Excuse me. He's thinking.
I see. So there was a
you can see
a dragon and a fairy.
Okay.
They had a son.
Oh.
Who? Oh, I see. So the dragon is like just some like dude who's a magician.
Okay.
Well. And then the fairy is just like a beautiful woman, and then they have a kid together. And this kid later becomes the Dragon King of Vietnam.
Wow. La-dee-da.
So one of the first kings of Vietnam actually was a dragon.
The son of a dragon. I think one of the the deities we've talked about before.
Yeah,
was
that's Lạc Long Quan.
Oh, it's Lạc Long Quan, the one and only.
The father of all Vietnamese people was a dragon as well.
The most badass of creatures.
I would say, yeah.
I mean, it's up there. Do their dragons breathe fire?
They're actually often associated with, like, symbols of spring. So dragons will bring, like, rain.
Badass.
So it's more like, what was that anime about a girl? This is actually a Japanese anime, so maybe I shouldn't. There's a dragon in an anime that's like a water spirit. I can't remember. I was just trying to think of the director of this anime. Studio Ghibli. So there's a Studio Ghibli anime.
Okay.
Where there's a little girl.
Yeah.
Who befriends a little boy, and then she later finds out that the boy is a
dragon
who represents a river.
Oh, I haven't seen this one. I'm unfamiliar with this. It must not be Hayao Miyazaki, though, because I've seen all of his stuff. But it's Studio Ghibli, you say?
Yeah.
Huh? I'll have to look into it.
It's more like that kind of dragon. They're more serpentine than Western dragons, which are like more like lizards.
Okay. Very cool, very cool. Well, the next question is for me, and it is a question you asked about the four immortals. The four immortals in Vietnam are basically your top-tier deities. Mm. You know, Vietnam's got a lot of deities. I mean, they got tons and tons of deities.
Okay.
So many myths, so much mythology to go through. We've talked about a lot of the deities on this podcast before, but these are kind of like the cream of the crop.
Okay.
You know, like, when we're talking, like, deities, these are the ones that everyone's like, yeah, those are the most badass.
I see.
Of the deities. So, like, if you don't, like, care about any of the other deities, these are kind of, like, the four. They're, like, the OGs, the George mm-hmm. Washingtons, you know? Okay.
Yeah, thank you for translating that for my American brain.
So, the first is one we've actually talked about quite a few times on the podcast before, which is Sun Tin. He mm-hmm. is the king of the mountains. He protects the Vietnamese people from the hurricanes. And of course, Thu Tin, who is the water deity who brings all of those terrible hurricanes. As you might remember, Son Tin married the daughter of a king. Mm-hmm. Thu Tin was super upset about it. So, you know, yes. Lifetime of hurricanes. So Thu Tin's kind of a dick. But Son Tin, you know, he's protecting you. The mountains are seen as a form of not only natural protection from the hurricanes and the rains, but also, of course, a natural protection from other empires like Cambodia and China and all these other empires. So Sun Tin is kind of like their Zeus of sorts.
Ah, I see.
You know, he's the one, he's like their protector.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And next is Saint Jean. Most of these are saints, so if you go to a Vietnamese festival, any of their festivals, often they'll have churches where these different saints are, and depending on the festival, you'll celebrate a different mm-hmm. of the four immortals, most likely, along with some of the smaller deities.
Yeah.
Saint Jean is the warrior deity of sorts. So the story goes, there's a three-year-old boy, and everyone hated him because he was 3 years old and he still couldn't talk. People are like, fuck this idiot. Like, he's a dumb bitch.
Mm.
No one likes him.
Okay.
And they've basically, like, pushed him off. At 3 years old, they're like, we don't care about you. You go live in the wilderness or whatever. Mm. Like, you know, we care for you no more. So his 3-year-old, Saint Jean, although at the time, no saint, just regular Jean.
Oh, I see. Pre-Saint Jean.
And he's walking around, you know, being a 3-year-old, doing whatever it is 3-year-olds do.
Crying, mostly.
Probably crying, probably in a field crying, especially since his parents and loved ones and entire community banished him.
For the crime of being not a saint yet.
And so he's walking along, crying, and he sees this Chinese empire, like just all of these Chinese warriors. Very intense. They got the fireworks and they got the cool, like, people on the boat, you know, shooting bows and arrows off of horses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very terrifying indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh shit, what do I do? Well, at that moment, he turns into a full-grown man.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fast.
Turns into a full-grown man. He runs back to the village. He tells them that they're, you know, that they're, these Chinese empire's coming, and they're like, pshaw, what do you know? You were just a three-year-old kid 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Apparently unfazed by the fact that this man is just aged.
I was going to say, you'd think that they would listen, at least, they would at least hear him out. You know, maybe not. It was a different time. Maybe this happens all the time.
Maybe. Hard to say, but they're like, whatever. So he puts on all of his armor, and he single-handedly fights off this entire Chinese army.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's like 300 times 10. Like, instead of 300, it's just one guy fighting off an entire Chinese empire. And he does it. And he's like, you know, he fights people, he's murdering people, and Chinese empire, like, this guy is too badass. Like, we just, we can't do it. He's too badass for us. So the Chinese empire abandon this land, and he comes back to the village, and the village is like, wow, great job. Like, we could have helped you, but we're glad you did it, because then we didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So, like, we're going to give you all these medals and awards. And he's like, I don't take medals. I don't do awards.
Well, he's only 3 years old. Like, why would you care about awards?
He does it for the honor.
Yeah.
And so he takes off his honor, and then he walks to heaven.
Wow.
Never to be seen again. Yeah. So that was the day Saint Zhang not only became a man, but became a saint.
And apparently dead.
Well, yeah, there is that.
3 years was a good amount of time. I wonder if it's really that impressive, frankly, because the Chinese Empire is notoriously weak to foreign armies. They have been conquered by numerous different hordes across the steppes. At great odds, too. The Chinese Empire also lost to the Japanese Empire, even though they greatly outnumbered the Japanese. Mostly because the Chinese Empire sucks at fighting anyone except Chinese people for some reason. So, that being said, was the saint really a saint or just not a Chinese person? And therefore, I don't know why I'm blaspheming Vietnamese saints. I actually have a lot of respect for this guy.
It's pretty badass. Plus, you have to also remember that the Chinese Empire is the only empire to fight off the Mongols. So Russia couldn't do it. The entire middle of Asia couldn't do it. India couldn't do it. I mean, you know, they ruled most of the world.
I seem to remember the Chinese Empire lost quite a few more people than the Mongols did.
Well, yes, they lost more people, but they still fended them off. I mean, it doesn't matter how many people you lose. It's like the American Civil War. Like, if you're talking about who lost more people, the North lost significantly more people than the South.
Consider that there's a big desert. Maybe it wasn't the Chinese people who fought off the Mongols, but just the Gobi Desert.
You know what? I hope St. Zhang haunts you.
I do too. He sounds like a cool guy.
Well, I mean, if you're on his good side.
You're right. If I'm on his bad side, he'll kill an entire army of me.
So, oh, yeah. Be wary, Brandon. Mm-hmm. All right, the third immortal is Chu Deng Tu. This guy is their business deity. You know, he's all about the money, money, money. Mm. He's your true capitalist in a communist world. So he's a super poor kid, and, you know, he's chilling at the beach because he's poor and poor people are lazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that goes without saying. You could just say he's lazy. You didn't even need to say he's poor.
And so he's chilling at the beach, and here comes along this beautiful princess, you know, riding in one of those, like, carriages that are, like, carried by four people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've seen those in the movies before.
Yeah, you've seen them in the movies. And so she's riding in one of those things, and he's like, oh, shit, I gotta hide, you know, because I'm poor, and you're disgusting because you're poor.
Right.
So his plan is to basically bury himself under the sand, which is an idea. I mean, maybe not the best idea.
Seems a little dangerous. What if there's high tide? It'll be like SpongeBob, where he accidentally murders that man.
Could be, but he hides under the sand. And the princess steps out of her caravan and she's like, wow, this is a really nice beach. I'm going to undress and swim in the ocean or sea or, you know, lake, water of some sort.
Well, it was probably a lake then, unbeknownst to them, truly an ocean, as we've seen before. They tend to call the Pacific Ocean a large lake, actually, quite a bit.
I mean, in many ways it is.
Mm. Very true.
And so she's swimming, and, you know, he's not exactly looking away. I mean, she's a beautiful lady. He's appreciating the view. You know, not in, like, a creepy way, but he's like, I appreciate you. Yeah. I appreciate your existence.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, the water splashes the sand, and he is discovered.
Mm.
Now, you would think, you know, in this situation, the princess would be like, ugh, poor people.
Yeah.
But instead, she's like, I like this guy. Mm. I don't know why. Maybe he was just a really good-looking guy. Maybe he just had that sort of... je ne sais quoi?
Maybe the sand softened his skin and it was like an exfoliating spa. So he looked quite a bit more wealthy than she was otherwise led to believe.
And so she falls in love with him.
Mm.
And he's like, but I'm poor. And she's like, I don't give a shit. Like, I love you for who you are. And so she goes to the king, and the king's like, dude, this guy's poor. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't marry him. He's a poor person. We're rich people. Like, that doesn't, you know, classic Romeo and Juliet kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, but I love him. He's like, I don't care. But she's like, I love him and I'm going to run away with him. So she runs away with him. And basically they have nothing. The king cuts her off entirely. Mm-hmm. No money, nothing to live on. And he's like, you know what? With just a little bit of hard work and perspiration, I'm going to start my own business. And he ends up becoming an incredibly wealthy, and they run an incredible business, and they become saints because they are so good at being capitalists.
I see.
Yeah.
That's Sigma Grind Set right there. I would almost be impressed if... Actually, no, I am quite impressed. Yeah.
Started from the bottom. Now we're saints. Just saying.
That's all it takes in Christian religion, too. Just a lot of money.
Just a lot of money.
To become a saint, I mean. What else do you need? Start a church? Proclaim a miracle? They gotta be bribing people for a miracle. How do you, like, prove that you've done a miracle without just, you know, bribing church officials?
People have to see it.
Oh, yeah. They're seeing that sweet cat flow into their pockets. This money's miraculous. Where'd you get it from? I sold coffee at a street stand for 30 years and then built up enough wealth to start a rug business. Wait, so what was his business? What was he selling?
Unclear. Business.
Selling business. My favorite product. Business. Hey, that's what I'm in. That's what I'm doing too. Selling business. Wow. I should really take some leads from this guy.
So, you know, if you ever are worried about money, you pray to the deity, Xu Dongto, and he'll give you all of that cash money flow.
I see. Okay.
So you should probably pray to him more, because, you know.
And bury myself in the sand.
Do that too. Okay. Might help.
Hopefully.
And the last of the four immortals, the only female of the four immortals, is Lu Han. Lu Han was the daughter of a king, and she is basically the epitome of a perfect woman.
Hmm.
She's smart, she's funny, she's gorgeous, she's good with money. She's basically everything you can think of. Now, early Vietnamese societies were matriarchal, so she is seen as a sort of leader. You know, kind
she's
of
she's a girl boss.
She's a girl boss. She really is. You know, ladies, they run the world, and she was the OG. So today in Vietnam, women look to her for kind of the perfect female figure, kind of a Rihanna or a Beyonce of sorts.
Yeah. Oh, Hillary Clinton. No. Let me think about that. Let me revise. A Kim Kardashian.
The Kim Kardashian of Vietnam, in many ways, yes. We're not offending the people of Vietnam right now.
By comparing them to Kim Kardashian?
Hey, Kim Kardashian's pretty cool. She's a very successful businesswoman.
But how did she obtain that? Listen.
Business!
The merits of Kim Kardashian are besides the point, because this lady is clearly better in every way. Regardless.
So those are your four wonderful immortals. So if you're ever wondering, like, hey, you know, I need to fight a war, or, you know, there's some hurricanes coming, or I need some of that cash, or, you know, you're a woman.
Or I want my wife to fund a successful war against hurricanes.
That's like the jackpot right there.
I will pray to these four immortals. I see.
All right, Brandon, the next question is for you. What is the history of Buddhism in Vietnam?
Interesting that you ask that. I especially love Buddhism. I can't look at Wikipedia and talk at the same time.
You know I can cut pauses out, so if you just want to, like, not say something until you're ready, I can do that.
I don't understand.
This is how podcasts work.
We're not just uploading this live?
Well, we might be uploading this one live, because editing this week might be a pain.
Great. What if we cut out all the bloopers and then put those in, like, their own Patreon exclusive? Do you think people would like that?
Yeah, people love behind the scenes shit.
So that would be something. So yeah, Buddhism in Vietnam. Buddhism, it's disputed whether or not Buddhism came to Vietnam from China or India.
Mm-hmm.
But it came before AD, so it's very, like, ancient. It's got a very long history in Vietnam. It's also the, like, majority religion in Vietnam. Even though the state is atheist, there is no God, that doesn't necessarily stop you from being Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, because Buddhist is, like, essentially an atheistic religion. If I could be so bold. yeah, so most people in Vietnam practice some sort of Buddhist tradition. I think it was originally persecuted very lightly by the communist government, but essentially you can't organize as a Buddhist without being watched over by the state. But since the government reformed itself back in, like, the 80s, it's been pretty easy to be a Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few temples to Buddhism, though it's like quite a decentralized religion. Like, it's sort of like essentially Christianity in the United States, where, like, everyone says they're a Christian, and there's, like, churches around the place, but no one really goes to the churches. They just kind of like saying that they're a Christian, because we've always been Christian. So it's like that for Buddhism in Vietnam, okay. Essentially. So there's a lot of people practicing Buddhism in the sense that, like, they follow philosophies of Buddhism and try to find Zen. Or what is it? That's Taoism. What's the thing you're looking for in
Buddhism? Nirvana.
Nirvana, yeah. You know, life is about achieving Nirvana. but they're not like, and there's, like, Buddhist-inspired festivals, mm-hmm. that have, like, a Buddhist aesthetic. But they're not like,
So it's like Christmas in America.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're not out there organizing very much for it. There's not very many people going on pilgrimages,
uh-huh.
As they might, like, in Islam to Mecca. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, Vietnamese Mecca that I know of, at least. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, kind of jumping off of that, Pure Land Buddhism is a specific type of Buddhism. Although it's in many different parts of the world, it is pretty specific to Vietnam. It actually started back in India, and basically there was this guy, and he's like, man, this Buddhism thing, it's really hard. You know, transcending, like, it's a lot of fucking work.
Yeah.
So, it's impossible. We have decided that because Earth itself is evil, because the planet is sin itself, It is impossible in this plane of existence to transcend. So what Pure Land Buddhism believes is that you basically work your way up, and Earth is like a level.
Ah.
But then you can level up past Earth to what's called Pure Land.
Ah.
Now, Pure Land isn't heaven. It's like the level before heaven.
I see.
So it doesn't have, you know, all these evil sins of Earth, but it's not heaven yet. But, I mean, you know, the Pure Land's also pretty badass. It's got gods. It's got deities. It's got magic talking trees. What they're talking about and what their magic is, unclear.
Okay.
But the trees are magical. It's also got, you know, a bunch of, like, just badass people who are like, yeah, this is cool.
That sounds pretty good.
So the goal of Pure Land Buddhism is to get first to the Pure Land. And this can be done in a lot of different ways. Of course, much like all religions, there is a form of prayer. And like many Eastern religions, it is through meditation.
Mm.
These meditations, like all forms of Buddhism, are found in mantras. So this mantra meditation is specifically comes from repeating the name of their specific Buddha that they praise, which is Amitabha. So you would close your eyes and you would say, Amitabha, Amitabha, Amitabha. And the idea is to focus on the words and to focus on cleaning your mind, emptying it of all things, and envisioning the Pure Land.
Hmm.
And by doing this, you can become closer to Amitabha. And basically, it's the way you get to transcendence. It's the way you get to nirvana.
So, I see.
So basically, as in all forms of Buddhism, you're reincarnated, you know, again and again. And I guess humans, like, the last level of Earth.
Yeah.
But then once you reach human, the next goal is to move on to Pure Land. Now, when you're at Pure Land, you can just chill there. Like, that's where Amitabha is. He's just, like, you know, there, greeting people, shaking hands, greasing palms, doing his thing. But if you truly want heaven, that's the next step.
Oh.
So then you just continue to do what you did in Earth, but now you do it in the Pure Land.
I see. So what you're saying is that Earth is like Facebook, and the Pure Land is like the metaverse, where heaven is.
Go on.
Instagram? I don't know. I don't know what heaven is in this analogy. What comes after the metaverse? I guess going outside. Heaven is just going outside. And then going back to the Earth. Wait a second. There's kind of a loop in this analogy. Regardless, I think Amitabha is obviously Mark Zuckerberg. It sounds quite nice. I'm not too sure about the whole Earth is sinful thing. That seems a little bit...
I mean, that's the whole Buddhist philosophy, is that we're born in sin. And oh. Transcendence is the abandonment of sin.
I see, I see. That's... Really?
Did you not read about any Buddhism at all?
Well, I read about the history of Buddhism. I have not read the philosophy of Buddhism. No.
The whole book.
I did all the homework, I'll let you know.
I'm not saying nothing. I would have done it. I'm not good.
This is some cinema verite right here.
That's
right.
All
of our listeners.
We'll cut to the part before I said really. That's what Buddhism is? I didn't know the plus. Are you... I mean, I can't. You've studied Buddhism.
Yeah, that's the whole idea of Buddhism. Is that it's to transcend all of the evils of Earth. So, greed, lust, you know, all those kind of things.
But that's what makes life fun.
That's Buddhism. That's the whole idea. Because don't you know the story of Buddha?
Yeah, he was a rich guy who was like, I have too much money, and I'm bored. That's what I got out of it.
Sort of. He was a king, and one day he was walking around his kingdom.
Son of a king. He was a prince.
That's right. I'm sorry. He was the son of a king, and one day he was walking around his kingdom, and he's like, man, all these poor people, like, it just really makes me sad. So he goes to his king. He's like, you know, his father. He's like, hey, we should, like, not have them be poor. And he's like, no. They have to be poor.
Mm.
He's like, damn. And then he goes to live among them, and he abandons all worldly pleasures. That's Buddhism.
The first fail son. Dude was really like, wow, we should do something about these poor people. Oh, you're not going to help me, Dad? I guess I'll just stop trying to do anything then.
Wow, you've just insulted the entire Buddhist community in one swing.
Yeah. Well, my understanding of Buddhism was that Buddhists recognized that there was a duality to life. So there's like the pursuit of nirvana, but then there's also the worldly pleasures, which you're allowed to take part in so long as you don't forget that the ultimate goal is internal peace or eternal peace.
Mm. Yeah.
Which doesn't map onto the whole the world is sinful, because if things are sinful, you shouldn't be doing them at all. But you can't not eat. If you take pleasure in eating, you're committing sin. Right? If the world is sinful and pleasures are sinful.
Well, it's sort of like, it's like Christianity, right? The idea is that you're born into sin, that the very first sin is to exist. And so everything you do is sin. But in Buddhism, it's like Christianity where, you know, Buddha forgave everyone of their sins. Jesus Christ does the same thing. So it's accepting that the world is sinful and that you're going to do bad things, but then also try to not do all of them and just do some of them. So like Pure Land, it's like it's a stepping stone.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that makes Pure Land interesting in relation to Vietnam is that it's like the most, like by far the most popular like sect of Buddhism.
Yeah, it's over 40% of religious people in Vietnam are Pure Land Buddhists. So that's a very significant population for a atheist country.
Yeah.
Which, of course, as we've talked about before, it is kind of like, you know, it's more of calling yourself, right, being a Buddhist, quote-unquote, than it is actually practicing the many things of Pure Land Buddhism.
Right. And it makes sense that, of course, a communist country would develop Pure Land Buddhism, because, of course, to the communist, anything that is fun is sin.
But I do really enjoy the idea that some guy in India, like, 4,000 years ago, was like, what about the multiverse? Because that's basically what Pure Land is. Like, it's another plane of existence. It's not like heaven. It's like, it's the multiverse.
Yeah.
So, you know, pretty smart guy.
Well, I mean, if you want to think about it that way. I also believe in a multiverse because it's fun.
It's pretty badass, the idea.
I agree. So then we're on to Taoism.
That's right, Brandon.
The final question of the day. Taoism is, well, obviously it's like a sort of religion. It's difficult to describe if you're not acquainted with it, let me think. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's more of a philosophical movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I try to liken it to like, Taoism in Vietnam is like transcendentalism in the United States, where it's like a philosophical movement that tries to describe how the average Vietnamese person is supposed to like live in a moral or like in a way that would maximize their like moral obligations to the world. Yeah. I lost my train of thought.
Let me help you out here for a second. So I, of course, am a Taoist. I've been a practicing Taoist for a couple of years now. I first read the Tao Te Ching when I was in high school. I actually read the Tao Te Ching after reading some of the transcendentalists here in the United States, Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. There are a lot of similarities between them. I think one of the biggest similarities between, say, the American transcendentalist movement of the 1800s and the Tao Te Ching, which of course goes back thousands of years and is a contemporary of Confucianism and actually argues a lot with Confucianism and a lot of the other Eastern philosophies of the time, which is the idea in Taoism that everything happens for a reason. Everything has purpose to it, but it is not our job to understand it. So the big metaphor in Taoism is, imagine life is a river and you are a leaf upon this river. Now, the way the river flows, that's fate, that's destiny, that's everything that's supposed to happen. Now, we can spend our entire lives trying to swim against the current. But the fact is no matter how much you fight against it, current's still going to go that way. You know, you're not a person, to be clear. You're not a person in the river. You're a leaf. So you can swim against the current all you want, but it's not going to do anything. Now, some people see that as an excuse to be lazy, to do nothing. Of course, Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson were both inspired by the Tao Te Ching. And some people who read Henry David Thoreau kind of just argue that he went off to live in the woods so he wouldn't have to do anything. But the idea isn't to do nothing. It's to accept that the world is the way that it is, but to also move in that direction. Right, so to work your hardest, but not expect any outcome from it. So it's really, it's a very empowering way to think, because you become less obsessed with the results, right? Which is a very American thing. You know, we care very much about, do you get first place? Do you have the most money? Blah, 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 blah. Where Taoist philosophy is, it's about putting in the work, no matter the outcome. So it doesn't matter if you fail. It doesn't matter if you are poor. What matters most in Taoism is about being in the moment. It's about being there. It's about accepting the world for what it is and being okay with that.
Yeah. And specifically, Vietnam Taoism essentially influences all contemporary Vietnamese philosophy. Even though it's a strain of thought that originates from China, it originated from China such a long time ago that it's kind of lost its national identity in other East Asian countries, and particularly in Vietnam. My understanding is that pretty much every Vietnamese philosopher or work of literature can be correlated with components of Taoist philosophy, going back all the way into ancient history.
Very nice. Well, Brandon, that is another week of Vietnam. This is sort of a surreal experience, because originally when we planned this specific podcast episode, we were going to be on our way to Vietnam. We were going to be very close to Vietnam. This was supposed to be one of our last podcasts before going to Vietnam. We do have a couple of more in the tank, but we are reaching the end of this journey. How do you feel about that, Brandon?
I am excited to start another journey, because I have actually had quite a great time learning about Vietnam. And hopefully, obviously, we're going to be able to visit Vietnam, even though that will be out of the time frame of when this particular project ends. I think it's been pretty great. Hopefully we can replicate the same thing with other destinations and learn a lot more about the world.
Absolutely. Coming into this project, I was worried, as you had before, that we would quickly run out of topics. We'd quickly run out of things to talk about. But of course, like all countries, like all places in the world, there's just so much. And the more you learn about it, the more there is to know. I mean, I feel, even though we've been on this project for almost 3 months now, I feel like I know less about Vietnam than when we started, which,
yeah, I'm with you there,
which I think is absolutely great. And I'm excited for our next journey, which is going to be a little bit different than this one. It's going to be in the form of a docuseries, and a lot of exciting things are going to happen in that realm, but we'll get into that in a future podcast. But for today, Brandon, any final thoughts about Vietnam?
I wish there was like a sports team I knew about. I could be like, go these people. But in that vein, go Vietnam. Hey, how did they do in the Olympics?
I don't
know.
Did
they win any medals?
We should look into this.
That's a TikTok video right there.
Well, until next week, you can find me at AustinLogo12.
You can find me at Nom Nom Project. I'm the other guy.
And you can find this podcast wherever you hear podcasts. You can also find us at patreon.com/lifeviewfiction for early access and exclusive content. And thank you all for listening.